You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are continuing our summer school series and finishing the eighth principle from Innovations in Play Therapy, Issues, Process, and Special Populations, edited by Gary Landreth. And in this section, Landreth has been going through the personality characteristics that make effective child-centered play therapists, and they essentially have been the modifications and revisions of the eight principles that Landreth took from Axline. So we're going to hit the last one today, and then we're going to move into some other books and other sections from some seminal works. So eighth principle is the therapist establishes only those therapeutic limits that help the child accept personal and appropriate relationship responsibility. And I love that. I have never heard that phrase before. We talk a lot about setting therapeutic limits. We talk a lot about the benefits, a lot about the outcomes, a lot about how there is personal ownership and personal responsibility that is naturally tied to the use of therapeutic limits. But the phrase appropriate relationship responsibility, I think, is so rich, and I've never conceived of that phrase before. So this is why we're going through these older works, because there's little nuggets of gold throughout here. So we're going to read some sections from this eighth principle, and I'm reading on 28 and 29 in the book, by the way. Okay, so it starts out with a quote from Campbell, and if you are not familiar with the 1993 Campbell work, that was actually the interview with Violet Oaklander. So if you have not checked that out, that's actually another very interesting seminal work that you would probably find some benefit from. But the quote is, "Children need to know deep down inside that the people who love them will keep them safe even when they play." So getting back to the power of the relationship and the environment in the child-centered model, children need to know deep down that people who love them will keep them safe even when they play. So that came straight from the Campbell interview. So now continuing, no child can feel safe if the child's aggressions overpower a parental figure. Let me say that again, because not only do we need to understand this, but we need to help parents understand this. No child can feel safe if the child's aggressions overpower a parental figure. The wise play therapist understands that without limits, there can be no therapy. Just like in the CPRT manual, it says without limits, there are no security. And with no security, there is no safety within the relationship. So very similar principles, but the wise play therapist understands that without limits, there can be no therapy. The therapist knows that appropriate limits must be set because they provide the child with the security necessary for satisfactory therapy to take place. All right, so essentially what we're doing is giving as much freedom and autonomy and independence as we can grant. Yet, when limits are needed, we set them because they are required for the security necessary for therapy to take place. All right, so obviously we only set a few limits and we provide a clear definition of acceptable and unacceptable behavior. That's why we provide the alternatives. So we set the neutral limit and then we provide alternatives. Why? Because it's very clear the limit is the unacceptable behavior and the alternatives are the acceptable behavior. All right, these common sense limitations protect the child, the therapist, and the playroom. All right, so let's go back to what are the three unwritten rules for limits in the playroom? I'm sure you all just yelled them out. The child has to be safe, we have to be safe, and nothing can be damaged on purpose in the playroom. Okay, so that's what this is referring to here. They are common sense limitations to protect the child, the therapist, and the playroom, and are a constant reminder of the distinction between fantasy and reality. Ponder that for a moment. Actually, I just stole that from Gary Landreth. He actually says that. Ponder that. Okay. So the distinction between fantasy and reality, sometimes the only way that a child can understand that is through limits. That's very important. Such limits anchor the child's therapy to the world of reality. The therapist is aware that limits are conducive to developing self-discipline and hopes that the child will eventually set limits for himself. And isn't that the end goal? Because we know that what comes out of limit setting, when necessary, is that the child develops self-responsibility and self-control. So inevitably, the child will not only set their own limits, but comply with their own limits. And it takes us out of the need to set those limits at some point. Okay, so when setting limits, the therapist is firm, just, and strong. It's critical for the therapist to maintain neutrality while sympathetically reflecting the child's feelings. This is crucial, y'all, because if our emotions come out in the way that we set limits, for a variety of reasons, it taints the whole process. So we're firm, just, and strong, but we have to be neutral while sympathetically reflecting the child's feelings. Often we forget to reflect the feelings altogether. We jump straight to the limit. And often our wording is not neutral. And often the way that we're presenting the limit sounds emotional, sounds charged, sounds something. So, I'm not for hitting you, but as soon as we get to that state where our body language and our tone of voice and our facial expression and everything about us screams of something other than neutrality, we lose the impact of limit setting because it needs to be neutral. Continuing, the therapist does not react to the child with irritation or anger, but sets limits in an impersonal, non-punishing manner. We state it just like we're stating that the grass is green and the sky is blue. You really want to throw those cars, but those cars are not for throwing at me because they could hit me and hurt me. You can choose to throw those cars into Bobo, or you can choose to throw those at the target. Which do you choose? It doesn't matter if one just clipped my ear or hit me in the face or I'm bleeding because it nicked my knee or whatever. All of which have happened, by the way. So, you know, it doesn't matter what has happened leading up to that point. We say it in an impersonal, non-punishing manner. It's just factually. And the counselor communicates limits decisively and seeks to convey the spirit of a non-punitive, helpful authority. Really significant phrase there, as a helpful authority. So we often don't think of ourselves as an authority figure because we work very hard to maintain equality in the playroom. But in terms of setting limits, because you have to be safe, the child has to be safe, and things can't get damaged or broken on purpose, we become a helpful authority, only in the sense of we're helping to make it clear what the unacceptable behaviors and the acceptable behaviors are and give the child an opportunity to practice self-regulation. So we have ultimate authority as far as what needs to happen for safety and security. And that helps the child, again, feel that they can move through therapy because they have to have that security for therapy to take place, like we already talked about. Okay, continuing, to be successful, the therapeutic relationship must be built upon genuine respect that both the child and the therapist have for each other. The play therapist is willing and able to set appropriate limits to preserve the necessary sense of respect and acceptance for the child. Okay, let's pause there. What are the questions we ask ourselves? Is this limit necessary? If I allow this behavior to continue and do not set a limit, am I still able to accept the child? That's what this is talking about here. We have to be willing and able to set appropriate limits to preserve the necessary sense of respect and acceptance of the child. The therapist knows it is possible to be accepting of the child's feelings without permitting the child to carry those feelings into action. This goes back to all feelings are valid even when behavior is inappropriate. So it is possible to be accepting of the child's feelings while still needing to set a limit on behavior. and in this wording, without permitting the child to carry those feelings into action. Okay, continuing. The therapist recognizes and respects the child's wish to break the limits, and harmless channels are provided so the child can express his or her feelings. Please be very mindful of that phrase, especially if you struggle with behavior and kids that do not comply with limits, and the ones that you have to repeat limits multiple times, and the ones that you have to move to ultimate limits, and the ones that you have to move to ultimate choice giving. If that unnerves you, and if that really is difficult for you, I'm going to read that again. Well, I'm just going to read it again for everybody, but be mindful if that's you. The therapist recognizes and respects. So we have awareness and we accept it out of respect that the child wishes to break the limits, and we provide harmless channels so the child can express his or her feelings. You're not wrong for wanting to break the limit. I'm going to give you alternatives. All right, continuing. The play therapist remains accepting even when the child chooses to break a limit. So the first time we set a limit, or the sixth time we set a limit, which really you should never have to set it six times. It's three times and then an ultimate limit. But I'm just saying, you know, in metaphorical sense here, it doesn't matter how many times we set a limit, we maintain neutrality and we remain accepting of the child's behavior. Because the child chooses what the child chooses, and all we do is enforce the consequence of the choice. So we can be completely accepting and neutral even when the child chooses to break the limit. Okay, and then finally, the experience of play offers the therapist the opportunity to build a therapeutic, child-centered relationship. It is this therapeutic relationship, rather than the materials or the techniques, which bring about healing and growth. Therefore, the personality characteristics and interpersonal skills of the play therapist are critically important. All right, so I don't think I've ever shared this, but when I was in undergrad, my minor was in Bible, biblical studies officially. So in addition to my psychology degree, which is my bachelor's degree, I had a minor in biblical studies. And one of the things that the professor said to us all the time when we were studying the Bible is, what's the therefore, therefore? So in this paragraph, I'm going to reread it, and I want you to listen to the therefore because it ties to what was said above. The experience of play offers the therapist the opportunity to build a therapeutic, child-centered relationship. It is this therapeutic relationship, rather than the materials or the techniques. It's not about our toys. It's not about our skills. It's not about whether we have Bobo or not. It's not about how many acting out aggressive toys we have. It's not about how small our room is, how big our room is, how well equipped our room is. If we're fresh out of grad school, if we've been doing it for 20 years, if you have no CCPT knowledge whatsoever except this podcast, or if you're CCPT certified, rather than the materials or the techniques, it is the therapeutic relationship that brings healing and growth. Therefore, the personality characteristics, your traits, your personality characteristics, you individually as a child-centered play therapist, who you are, and your interpersonal skills, the way that you interact, are critically important. So is it about materials and techniques and skills, etc.? Of course. But it is the therapeutic relationship that brings healing and growth. We know this. And therefore, your personal characteristics, who you are, what you bring into that playroom because of your essence, your being, the way that you interact with kids, those things are critically important. I hope that encourages you. I hope it makes you mindful and aware of the power of you in the playroom. And not because you're so knowledgeable, not because you have developed so many clinical skills in this model, not because you've gone through so much training, which many of you have, and I am fully supportive of that. We should always be learning, always be growing. But just because you're you, and your personality, and your traits, and your characteristics, and the relationship that you build, the way that you interact, the way that you communicate, all of those are critically important too. So don't get so caught up in the skills. Don't get so caught up in doing things in the most effective way that you fail to acknowledge that just you in the room means a lot. I hope that that gives you a boost this week. And I hope that you celebrate how you interacting with your clients is meaningful just because you're you. All right. Good to be with you all. We've finished with the 8 principles, so we're going to be moving on to some other passages in the next few weeks, and we'll continue this for the rest of the summer, and then we'll be back into some regular curriculum once summer is drawn to a close. So, love you all. Thanks so much for your time each week that you spend with me. If you want to reach out to me, I'd love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com, and I look forward to talking with you again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.